Support for The Common comes from Davis Malm. Their tax attorneys take the time to understand your unique goals and find the most cost-effective ways to accomplish them, distilling complex tax laws down to clear choices so you can make the best decisions. DavisMalm.com. DavisMalm.com.
Hey, it's Daryl C. Murphy, and I just want to talk to you real quick. The Common is produced at WBUR in Boston. We're public media. We don't have paywalls, which means we don't ask you to pay to see our work. We say, here's some powerful stories for free. And then, if some of those stories you read or listen to are important to you and you talk about it with your friends and family, and you even see the world a little differently, then we ask you to support it. Because we want to continue making work that is meaningful to you. And right now, I want to let you know what's happening at WBUR. Our radio shows, our podcasts are getting some of the biggest audiences we've ever had. Our journalism is winning awards, reaching new and more diverse audiences. And you are a big part of that. Our journalism has never been stronger, but the business has never been harder. We've had a big loss of sponsorship dollars, like a lot of media companies have in recent years. But one thing we've always been pretty good at is getting support from our listeners to make the things they love. So we're asking right now, in a crucial moment for WBUR, can you help us get through this by joining other listeners in supporting WBUR? We need your help to keep making the podcast you're listening to right now, along with everything else that comes from WBUR. Your help would mean a lot to me and to all of my colleagues. So please, head to our website, WBUR.org. Thanks.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. Andrew Brinker. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for taking the time. So you are a business correspondent for The Globe, which I would imagine that means you spend a lot of time thinking about the city's housing market.
Yes, that's correct. I'm a business correspondent at The Globe, and I write pretty much only about housing. So it's almost all that I think about.
Perfect. So yeah. I have a question for you. And just level with me.
Sure.
Keep it real. I'm a renter, and someday I'd like to buy a house. How bad is it out there for me?
Yeah, well, I'll preface this by saying that I'm a renter as well. Mm-hmm. I have been for the entire time that I've lived in Boston. And I'll level with you, it's bad. Mm.
Crush my dreams.
I will happily crush them. The reality is that if you are a renter right now in Boston or in Greater Boston and you're looking to get into the home buying market, it is about as bad as it's ever been. We have seen over the last couple of years this huge erosion of affordability because of what's been going on in the housing market and because of our underlying supply shortage. And so essentially what that means is that folks like you and me who, you know, maybe were saving up some money before the housing market caught on fire, the whole market has just completely shifted away from us. If we were thinking about it before the pandemic, if you were close, you're probably not close anymore.
Damn. Well, listen, you have a story breaking all of this down.
Yeah.
And your story starts off with a woman named Charisse Kenner. Tell me about her.
Yeah, so Charisse is 41. She has lived in West Roxbury for the better part of the last 10 years. And she, like you and I, is a renter. And, you know, she has a good job. She works as a faculty assistant at Harvard's Graduate School of Education. She was telling me about the raise that she got there, about $10,000 of a raise, which is, by pretty much anybody's standards, a pretty big bump. You know, that $10,000 took her to a salary of around $75,000 a year. And in a lot of other cities, that is enough to break into the homeownership market. But in Boston, just not the case anymore. Charisse, she was in an apartment for a while. a three bedroom with herself and her two teenage kids. And she'd been living there for a couple of years. And then an investor bought the property, jacked up her rent $700, and she had to leave.
Mm.
And that was, as she told me, one in sort of a long series of unfortunate run-ins in the rental market that she's had, where she's had to leave properties because of rent hikes. And so she made a decision to, instead of renting another three bedroom with enough space for a bedroom for herself and each of her two kids, to rent a two bedroom instead. So she's saving a couple hundred dollars a month on rent. All that money is going into her savings account so she can afford a down payment. She can afford the monthly payments on a house. And she's sleeping on the futon. I thought that her story was a really powerful example of sort of the lengths that ordinary folks have to go to today to, you know, to be able to afford to buy a home in this market, you know, sacrificing a bedroom for the futon, right?
Andrew, how did we get here?
Mm.
How did it get to be so bad?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's a little bit of a complex one, but I think I can break it down
fairly
simply. Yeah. So there are a couple factors that go into overall housing affordability, or specifically home ownership affordability. One of those is interest rates, and one of those is sticker prices for homes. So interest rates have been on the decline for decades, since the 1980s. In particular, between 2018 and 2021, they were really dipping. So that was like an ideal time to buy for folks. And then as the Fed started hiking interest rates in its sort of fight to tame inflation, mortgage rates started climbing. And over the last year, they've essentially doubled. And so for a lot of folks, what that means is that their monthly payment, you know, if you compare it to a year ago on a median priced house in Boston, about $1,000 more, it can be more than that. And, you know, the other part of this is sticker price. So how much a home costs in total, a home value. And sticker prices, as, you know, all of the headlines during 2021 and 2022 sort of rang, really shot up during the pandemic. At their peak, they were at about $900,000. Mm. They've come down since then. They've settled in. I think the last time I checked, it was around hovering a little bit over $700,000 for the median priced home in Greater Boston. But if you take those two things together, interest rates and home prices that are some of the highest in the country, we're talking about tens of thousands of people that have been pushed out of the housing market. And, you know, to put a bow on it, the thing that underscores this whole problem, as it does with any housing issue in Boston, is our supply shortage. We do not have nearly enough housing units.
Okay, let's say, you know, I see how bad it is out there to buy a house, but I still want to make a go of it in Boston. I want to give it a shot. What neighborhood would I have the best chance of buying a house in?
So if we're talking about Boston, I would say nowhere. You'll certainly have a better shot in a neighborhood like Dorchester, where, you know, by and large, there's a larger sample housing stock there. But I mean, if the question is, you know, what neighborhood do you have a really good shot of buying in Boston? I would say the answer is none of them. I mean, it truly takes a tremendous amount of money, and it probably takes a tremendous amount of luck at this point.
How much money do I need to buy a house in Boston?
It's a good question, and it's a lot of money. To answer this question in the story, I essentially looked at this analysis that was done by Boston Indicators. They're a research center out of the Boston Foundation. And they took a look at the question of total housing costs and what income you need, essentially, to be able to afford those costs. And the difference between 2021 and 2022 is frankly stunning.
Mm.
So in 2022, specifically September 2022, we're looking at homes on that lower third of the market. So you needed to make about $138,000 a year to not be cost burdened. Mm. So that means paying more than 30% of your income towards housing costs. And just to show you how much things have changed over even the last year, in 2021, September 2021, was about $96,000. Roughly, that's about 40%. The increase in income needed to be able to afford one of those homes in the lower third of the market without being cost burdened. That's a stunning, stunning increase.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more from Andrew.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
And we're back. Andrew, the housing market in Boston is looking pretty inaccessible. And I wonder, what does that do to the city's demographics and population? Because I would imagine you spoke to some folks who said, screw this, I'm leaving the city. You know, whether they stayed in Massachusetts or left the state altogether, right? Talk to me about what that does to our population as far as numbers go and the demographics of the city.
Yes. The fact of the matter is that when housing costs get to the point that they are right now in Massachusetts and in Boston, people start leaving. And by and large, that happens in an inequitable way, in large part because of policies of the past that has essentially excluded, you know, people of color from having as much access to wealth, right? And so because of those sort of existing disparities, when you have this massive shift in the housing market that is pushing tens of thousands of people away from home ownership, it disproportionately pushes out Black and Latino residents. So I actually have some numbers from that, from this Boston Indicators analysis that essentially looks at 2021 and 2022, how many folks were renters and could afford to purchase a home without being cost burdened. And we're looking at that lower third of the market again. Mm-hmm. So 2021, about 222,000 residents could afford that lower tier home without being cost burdened. A year later, it's about 125,000. Mm. So you're losing about 44%. So within that 44%, about 58% of the Black households that would have been able to purchase that lower tier home in 2021 could not in 2022. Mm. And similarly, for Latino households, that difference is about 47%.
Mm. You know, this story really hits home for me. You know, when I read it, I just imagined people running around in the streets rioting, man. You know, this is not a great situation. You know, it's not a great situation. Because personally, right, I do okay for myself. I do all right, you know? And I can't see myself buying a house here. Mm. And what makes it even worse is renting in Boston seems equally out of control. You know, as you mentioned in your story, Charisse had to move because her rent went up by $700. And those conditions seem untenable for someone who's working, who's not independently wealthy or come from wealth.
Yeah.
You know, my question is, what happens to a city when the people who work here, who contribute to culture here, can't afford to live here, to thrive here? What kind of Boston are we headed toward?
Well, I mean, frankly, I think it's a Boston that nobody's interested in seeing. I mean, it's a Boston, as you say, that loses all of those things that you just named. It's a Boston that loses culture. It's a Boston that loses diversity. There was an economist that I talked to for this story. His name's Adam Guerin. He's an associate professor of economics at Boston University. And he had this quote that I thought said it really well. He says, "People really need to start looking at the bigger picture here, which is what our city becomes when so many people can't afford to live here. Mm-hmm. It's a city without diversity and without essential workers, a city for the wealthy." And I think that says it all. You know, when we talk about those disparities that we just talked about and the folks that are being priced out, it becomes really, really obvious that we lose a lot of the people that makes a city vibrant, right? Mm-hmm. That makes a city special. You know, how long in 20 years is somebody going to have to commute to get to work in downtown Boston if they want to own a house? Because right now, I mean, if I'm talking about my situation, I don't own a house. I would think I would have to go an hour outside of the city.
Yeah.
In 20 years, what's it going to be? 2 hours, 3 hours? As it has been put to me by a number of folks, it is an existential problem for Boston and for greater Boston.
Andrew, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me and letting me read some of these really, really depressing numbers to you.
Ugh, yeah, crushed my dreams, man.
I'm sorry. I'm the bearer of bad news.
That's Boston Globe business correspondent Andrew Brinker. And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to The Common. Hit us up and let us know about your housing woes on Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok at WBUR The Common. You can also send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.